Hello, welcome to NC Asian American Ministries Podcast. My name is Sammy Ju and I'm your host. Today is episode 2 with Moses Jonalagada. And Moses is a student at Southeastern Seminary and he is involved with many ministries among refugees and international students. Hello, Moses. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
I am good. Well, thank you so much for sharing your personal story in the previous episode. And in this episode, I really want to know your seminary and church ministry experience.
Absolutely.
Great. So, first question is, what's your concentration of study at Southeastern Seminary?
So, yeah, at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, I'm doing two programs right now. I'm enrolled in two programs. One is the MDiv in Advanced Biblical Studies, and the other one is MA in Biblical Languages. And both of them concentrate on biblical languages. And I just took the MABL because it gives me more electives to do languages. So, and I did not want to skimp out on all the other courses that are offered in the MDiv. Mm-hmm. So that's why the MDiv and the MABL and I picked them because I want to study the languages more. I wanted to be proficient in Hebrew and Greek so I can read the Bible in Hebrew and Greek and learn for myself what the scriptures are actually saying instead of getting them from an English translation. Not that English translations don't do it justice. Mm-hmm. They do, but I just wanted to be able to read the Bible in Hebrew and Greek myself.
So do you recommend other people to study the biblical language?
Yes, I would. If possible, everyone should read the Bible in Hebrew and Greek. Mm. Because there's just, I've come to appreciate the Bible a whole lot more. Mm. Just even in its literary structure, or just the depth of truths and the depth of just the way God, you know, God wrote the Bible, it's beautiful, and you would only see it in Hebrew and Greek. So yeah, I would suggest.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I didn't major biblical language, but reading in Greek and Hebrew, it's been very, very helpful and inspiring.
Yeah.
Now, what are the values of studying at seminary?
Values of studying at seminary, values, I would say, you take your time away and then you come to a place where people who are completely sold out for Christ, people here are dedicated. That's why they are here. Otherwise, you know, they could be out there earning money, but they're here studying God's word and they're not being paid to do it. In fact, they're the ones paying to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's just when you're able to come away from, in a sense, come away from life and learn the things of God and learn how to minister to His people along with fellow believers, fellow brothers and sisters, I would say that is a big plus, and I value that very much, that I'm able to come away and learn alongside my brothers and sisters how to minister to the church and Jesus. Yeah.
So it's not just the academic learning, but also meeting the other people who are solely devoted and committed their lives to serve the Lord.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It's as if iron sharpens iron, and that's what happens at seminary, because you're living in close quarters with them. You see them almost every day, and you're learning biblical truths, and then friction happens, and then different ugly sides come out, but then you sort it out together, and then you learn to do ministry together, and you're learning these truths in life, practical as well as theological, biblical, all of these truths along with the communal living is what makes seminary a unique thing, I would say.
That's great. I love internet, and I really see the value of online learning, classes, but that can lose that side,
absolutely,
which is community and okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and it. When you're learning together, you can also, when you're in an online class, you're just interacting with the professor and the textbooks. But when you're in a classroom, you're interacting with fellow students, and that's different minds. So there's a lot more learning that can happen in the classroom. Yeah,
yeah, I think that can apply to just regular church, I mean Christian life, because a lot of people are watching sermons and YouTube and online, and they don't want to go to church, but actually that's not really true church.
That's not, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly, because church is people coming together and honoring Christ in whatever shape or form. So,
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. Now, what is the biggest need of Indian churches in the United States and also in India?
So the in the United States, I'll tackle that question first. I've only been to my dad's church, and I've been to a few, I wouldn't call them churches because they're bi-weekly or even once a month fellowships that happen in other states that I've been to. At least they're called Telugu Christian Fellowship or something like that. But I would say the biggest need would be in the Indian churches in the United States would be giving the gospel or teaching the word in a palpable format. I mean, most of the pastors that do, my dad included, he might chide me for this, but they try to preach or teach the Bible in a way as if they're in India. People here, when they come here, they're not operating in an Indian setting, they're operating in an American setting.
That's right.
So their whole values change, and the way they view life or time, everything changes. So I would say, yeah, just being aware of the pulse of the people and then ministering to them, preaching the word to them expositionally is the biggest need in the United States. And you know, there's topical sermons and they're good, they're still God's word and the Spirit uses them still, but people grow when they can read the Bible themselves, and that can happen when they're hearing expositional sermons. Yeah, I would say that's the biggest need in the United States, the Indian churches in the United States. Whereas in India, I would say just preaching. Because I'm just talking to my friends back home or talking to family or just even checking Christian media in India. It's just very prosperity gospel centered. So there's not good, solid, theologically sound teaching happening. And the biggest need definitely is solid biblical teachers, people who know how to exposit the scriptures, people who know how to study the scriptures, and people who know how to preach that truth, staying faithful to the scriptures and teaching that to the congregation, I would say is a big need. I'm not saying that there aren't any people preaching truthful to the scriptures, but there's a lot of prosperity gospel teachers as when compared to the solid biblical teachers. So the biggest need is expository teachers of the text.
Wow.
Of the Bible, yeah.
Wow. So Christ-centered.
Yes, Christ-centered.
Faithful, text-driven, expository preaching, which is relevant to the life of the people.
Yes.
Yeah, that's needed. Wow. That's great. So what you do at seminary right now is very valuable in that regard. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And that's the reason why I am learning biblical languages. I mean, I could learn just to read it for myself, but the reason why I'm going all the way is because I want to be able to teach biblical languages to these pastors or, you know, people. So that they can learn, so they can read the Bible themselves in the original languages, and they can be the ones who, it's like, oh, the Bible doesn't talk about, it's not man-centered as much, it is Christ-centered. So they can see that, and they can start preaching in a way that honors Christ and that edifies the congregation truly, Christ-centered expositionary preaching. So, yeah, that's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. Yeah,
awesome. That's great. Now, how do you share the gospel with Hindus and Muslims? I know there are a lot of Hindus and Muslims in India.
It's different when I'm sharing with Hindus and Muslims, but one thing that is similar is, first off, I try to make them my friend. I like cooking, so I invite them over and say, hey, do you want like good Indian food, and I can make you some. And nobody says no to Indian food because it's a piece of home. So everybody's open to that, and everybody accepts that invitation, and then they come in and then they ask me what I'm doing, and then I talk about my seminary, which naturally is a door to like, why seminary? Because, you know, us Indians, we're not wired for, like, people, we're wired for education. They're all about making money, getting good jobs, and becoming big in society, and this is very counter Indian mind. So they're like, why are you studying the Bible? There's a course for that. So that naturally opens up the question, and that's where I'll be able to share the gospel. And with the Hindus, it's just sharing the exclusivity of Jesus and how he is the only way. And it's just through a period of time that I get to do it with Hindus. Whereas with Muslims, it's very much more, it's very much more apologetic, and also just clarifying to them the doctrines of Christology and the Trinity. That's the way it takes. Whereas the Hindus, they may not comprehend it, but they can be okay with it. Whereas for the Muslims, they cannot, the doctrine of Trinity and the doctrine of Christology as taught in the Bible does not sit well with them. So trying to explain that and persuade them to the truth of the gospel is a big challenge when reaching out to the Muslims. With Hindus and Muslims, I would say two different ways. But I always try to build a relationship first so that they can, so that I can always go back to them. Even if they reject Christ in the first meeting, I can always, you know, come back to them and love them truly. And
You treat them as a person, not as a project.
Exactly. And and at the end of the day, all I say is, God, I have witnessed, I have been a witness. Now it's your turn to do what only you can do. And the Lord sometimes answers it with a yes and sometimes with a no. But it's not my kingdom that I'm building, it's his kingdom. So that gives me peace.
Great. Now, this is a generational question. Now, this how do you disciple, how would you disciple differently for second generation Indian Americans and the first generation Asian Indians? Let's say both of them are Christians.
Yes, both of them are Christians. First off, I'm just going to humbly say I am not old enough to disciple. But I would say, like, coming alongside as a fellow brother, you know, as Paul said, Timothy, don't let your young age, be a deterrent. But I would say to the first generation Indian Christians, I would say, be culturally relevant and be aware of the need of the people that you're ministering to or people that you're preaching to. Yes, it is the word that changes people. It is the truth that changes people. And all we need to do is deliver the word. But at the same time, we have to know where the people are at for us to effectively deliver the word. Because the guy might be suffering with foot pain, but if you give him medicine for a headache, it wouldn't do him any good. So you have to know your people, you have to know the congregation and where they're at, and you have to minister to them where they're at, not where you want them to be. And for the first generation Indians, I would say just they're culturally irrelevant, so it's for them to be more text-centered, more Christ-centered, and for them to... because they're engaging a culture that is relativistic, and I would disciple them to be solid in their convictions and be able to answer their peers and their professors when they're in a secular setting. Just be able to answer the questions that the world poses in a confident manner. So just be solid in their convictions and build their own personal relationship with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. Great. Well, I know you're doing a lot of ministries, Mahabad Ministries, Sunday International Together, and also Refugee Ministry at Cedar Point. Now, what are some exciting stories of what God is doing at your ministries?
So Mahabad Ministries, I would say, is a recent one that I joined. I mean, I've known the guy who does it for a while, but the ministry that I just started recently, in the same with SIT, but and I'll talk about them in a little bit, but with the refugees, definitely has been, because the refugees that I've been working with are from Afghanistan and Syria. And you know, I've had these misconceptions in my own head about, you know, like how they are not, how every Muslim is a terrorist and all that, but just growing with them or doing life with them has taught me a lot, and just God has used these times with the refugees to teach me that these are people that Christ died for, and these are people that Christ loves, and I have to love them the way He loved them, and the way He loved them is He died for them. So I have to die to my preferences. I have to die to my my needs or whatever, so that Christ could be shared. So that is the lesson that I learned. But the exciting thing is learning that lesson. You know, knowing the heart of Christ, and it is very humbling, and also very, it hurts a lot. But the joy that comes out of it is incomparable. And as for the SIT and Mahabad, it's just having faith conversations with people, having gospel conversations with people, and just explaining to them or trying to persuade them to the truth of the gospel and regarding the divinity of Christ. It's just it cements my own convictions. It strengthens my own convictions.
Right.
And while I'm sharing the gospel with them, and there's something that the Lord does, and when He's doing that, and when you're being used and Him doing that, it's just very exciting to be a part of that. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's great. Well, Moses, thank you so much for sharing about your ministry and seminary experience. Listeners, if you want to hear more podcasts from us, find NC Asian American Ministries at your podcast and subscribe it. You can listen to our weekly podcast update.